It is Saturday, December 8th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the Week in Geek News, and a discussion about digital dentistry. And the second half, your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we are covering the Week in Geek News, and we have a dentist, Henry Ramirez, to talk about the new technology in the dentist office. During the second half of the show, we're welcome to join the conversation. We're going to only talk about dentistry this week's show. So the numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org right now and send us email.
On Monday morning's Talk of the Bay, beyond 3D, some physicists think the world may have four or five or even more dimensions of space. KUSP's Robert Pauly talks to theoretical physicist Lisa Randall about the science of higher dimensions. That's Talk of the Bay, Monday morning at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io memberships available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Miles Elam, a slacker geek and student.
Good morning.
I really should change the script so you're not a slacker.
Yeah, I haven't felt like it right now. Recently.
What are you? Just a student?
It's just a student.
Geek student?
Yeah, student and tutor. I don't know.
No, geek student. All right. And Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems. Morning, Ryder.
Good morning.
And Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Morning.
You know, Sean, when you're not here, there's a big hole in the radio. I missed you last week. Thanks for being back.
You mean there's somebody actually talking about PCs?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I listened to the last few shows. We should be Mac speak.
Yeah.
I think it's trademarked. So, it's true, though. We ignore 80% of the population when you're not here, and I'm sorry about that. So thanks for being here. Let's start off with what's going on with YouTube. Miles?
A University of Toronto study has shown by some researchers that there is widespread misinformation in videos on YouTube. Now, you'd think, well, that seems kind of obvious. People can put up information. But a lot of times you would have – for example, medical information, they focused on immunizations for their study.
Yeah, great.
And there's a very common theme online, which is that immunizations tend toward autism or cause mm-hmm. autism. Yeah. And within the peer review journal and through the medical association and, for example, the New England Journal of Medicine, they find that there is no real correlation there. And
let's bring this into the YouTube. I do not want to have a discussion about whether.
And what they found was not only was this information widespread on YouTube, but that users routinely voted up the articles that were wrong.
Ah, interesting.
And then voted down ones that showed, for example, immunization in a good light.
Now, is that the fear factor working where if it's scary and kind of, you know, a secret is being discovered, that's more exciting and so people vote it up? Is that why it's being chosen? Or is it better production values? I mean, the voting system in YouTube, there's no correlation to what the people like. They just like it.
Right. It's not necessarily production values because a lot of the production values on YouTube are rather poor or they're fairly uniform.
Okay, so this is interesting because you could kind of relate if you were doing a story on health on YouTube, you do like a little video piece about some suggestion of what's good and bad versus your health. You're kind of giving medical advice, but of course you could say this is not medical advice. But it's very much,
or rather, I am not a doctor. But
right, yeah. It's very much a question of is it journalism, and if it's journalism, are there some kind of standards that should be implied? Are people watching these videos and questioning whether they're accurate or not? There's a lot of things going on there with YouTube. Do you think YouTube's going to implement some kind of software solution to this where people can say, not only do I not like this or I voted down or whatever, I think this has claims that are inaccurate references?
Would that be a good precedent to set?
I don't know.
What is considered good behavior? What is considered good information?
So would you say then that I mean, all the stories we hear about Wikipedia, which is also available for anybody to do stuff on, maybe inaccurately, that's pretty accurate when it comes to scientific
In general,
work.
It is, yes.
And the thing it's with YouTube be, is yeah. that you there's one publisher, and then other people can add comments. In the wiki environment, everybody's a publisher. So there's a difference in that you can retract a statement or you can track part of the video. In a video, you can't, or part of the content on Wikipedia, but on the video, you can't. It's there or not there.
Right. It's YouTube is a popularity contest.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. It's
okay, not, so what's your recommendation? Be wary of what you learn on YouTube?
Absolutely.
Okay, except for the cats.
Look at it with a critical eye and, in general, know that YouTube is a popularity contest. It's an entertainment source
rather than an educational source. My kids are addicted to the blooper, cats and dogs, you know, animal bloopers that are on YouTube. We watch them all the time, where the cat's running down and falls over, things like that. Hilarious. But I don't use my medical advice there. I go for Dr. Don instead. Thank you very much, though, Miles, for that. I appreciate it. Ryder, what's going on in DRM and hardware?
Well, Western Digital has a new network-enabled external hard drive that has been reported to be infested with DRM restrictions. They basically won't allow any video files or MP3 files that are conventional formats. I think there's 35 different extensions of file types that it won't allow.
Now, this is a NAS device?
It's not exactly, it's kind of a NAS. I don't think it has any RAID type features to it. But
it's a network attached drive.
Yeah, it's a network attached drive.
And you can't put content on it? I don't understand.
No, you can put the content on it, and I believe you can share it locally on your local network, but there's software that's provided with it that allows you to access it on the internet. And it's basically third-party software that you install on your PC, and that is what performs all the restrictions and prevents. It disallows putting those file types on shares.
So it promotes the idea of sharing your content online and then restricts it, and you don't learn that until later.
Yeah, oddly, I mean, if you go out to Western Digital's marketing, they specifically say it's useful for sharing media, multimedia. Right. So it's kind of an odd contradiction. But they have a whole list of odd, everything from DivX to Xvid to WMV files and MP3s, of course, AACs. Oddly enough, even like Windows temp files are restricted.
Well, why implement this restriction? Aren't they saying that they're then policing, and then if someone does do something illegal, they might partially be responsible?
Basically, it's a proactive, dubious nature for copy-protected formats. So
are they getting money from some large content provider to do this?
Hard Miles? To say. Yeah.
There is also the economic aspect to it. The files that are media files will tend to be larger as well, so it may be an economic just trying to keep things smaller, the usage smaller.
With a terabyte hard drive?
Well, I think it's the network access or hard drive.
Well, it does have a gigabit network card in there. There have been other complaints that it really only gets about 6 megabytes a second throughput on it. So
that's a lot less.
It's not the best NAS drive.
Well, as you said, it's not a RAID, so it's going to be limited.
But there are workarounds for this. You can basically implement Samba file sharing as an alternative to eliminate the software that they use and don't install what they consider required software. It's not really required. And there is actually a hacking community already. There's a wiki that I guess it's the firmware is Linux, so you can hack it and modify it to behave a little bit better.
All right. Well,
but
if you have
a whole bunch of media files, it's probably going to run slower on our network. You take that away, and the device may be perceived to be faster as well.
Could be. I suspect it's political, though.
I'm sure it is, but,
All right. Thank you very much, Ryder, for that. Sean, hi.
Morning.
So what you got for us?
Well, if you're looking for cheap electronics this holiday season, you might want to see if you have a CompUSA store open in your area, because they're all
closing. Are you being paid? Oh. sound like a commercial.
No,
they're closing?
Story,
why?
Yeah.
Why are they closing?
Because they can't keep up with the competition in the industry. There's Circuit City. Walmart is now bringing a lot more electronics into their stores. And, of course, the bigger one is Best Buy.
We
just announced that
well.
Best Buy just announced that they're going to start selling Dell computers. That's another piece of news this week.
Wow.
CompUSA stores are closing around the nation. I guess there's about 103. They're still open. And they're going to stay open through the holiday season, but they're going to be
Getting rid of inventory.
Giving steep discounts to
the
liquidation.
Is the corporation, is it totally folding? Is it like some child company? I mean,
yeah, you know, they're selling all their stores. It looks like the company's just going away.
Wow.
They lost $45.7 million Q3 this year on revenues of $424 million. Not very good.
No.
And they've had some big cash infusions in 99 and 2000. In 99, they got $2 billion. But they just can't compete.
All right. So
I think those stores might turn into other electronic stores if you're lucky. But otherwise, they're going away.
But it might be a great place to look for good deals.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. CompUSA going out of business. Thank you very much, Sean. Well, I think we're going to go into dentistry at this point, if everyone's cool with that. Geeks? All right. You listen to Geek Speak. We have Sean Cleveland, Ryder Brooks, Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. And now we're joined by Dr. Henry Ramirez, DDS. Hi, Henry. Welcome.
Good morning.
So Sean turned me on to you as a dentist a long time ago. We've done a show about 2 years ago about the same kind of content. So in general, you're doing a lot. Digital computer age has hit the dentistry field quite hard. And one of the things that you do, like we just did last week on my teeth, to crowns. Can you kind of describe the process of what you're doing?
Well, we take an infrared camera, takes a photograph of your prepared teeth, and the CEREC system, which I use, has a new biogeneric method of forming your tooth digitally to work with your opposing teeth, and it's milled out of a polyceramic block that is essentially has the same properties as human enamel.
So,
and it's milled by a machine?
It's milled by a machine with two diamond robotic arms. The new milling machine I have, the XL, MCX XL, does it in about 5 to 12 minutes. So instead of having a temporary crown for 3 weeks, you get it same day, same appointment.
If you're interested in seeing some pictures, a link to my Flickr feed on geekspeak.org. Today's show is December 8th, 2007.
Are these pictures of your mouth?
No. There's no pictures of my mouth online. You know, I asked for pictures from a camera of my teeth, and yeah, they're not pretty. I like the 3D models instead because, of course, my teeth has like the nerve down there, and it just makes you kind of wince. But the upshot of this is that this camera, this infrared camera, is a 3D camera, correct? It's getting a 3D image of your teeth. So you go in, you grind down your tooth, which we won't get into a lot, but and take a 3D model of it, and you put it in your computer and kind of stitch together. And then you, using this kind of biofeedback, you kind of create a perfect tooth for my mouth.
It's yes.
kind of concept, right?
Exactly. This software that's called Biogeneric, it takes a database of the ideal tooth, and it massages it so that it fits over the prepared part of your tooth, and then also takes into account your opposing teeth so that the occlusion, how your teeth fit together, is idealized.
I like how you did the figuring out the upper teeth instead of you actually produced a negative of my upper tooth by putting something in some kind of foam or something in my mouth, and I got an imprint, and then scanned that to determine how much how close those teeth get to the bottom teeth. Is that kind of
exactly. It's a polyvinyl siloxane bite registration material. And you just bite into it. It hardens in about a minute. And then we image that and stitch the preoperative photographs with the of that particular bite registration with the prepared model. And you have just an excellent articulated model.
So when you say articulated model, you're talking about a 3D model of what's going to be generated on screen, and you kind of then look at the properties of like how thick the fake enamel stuff is going to be, and also how much like separation there'll be between the other teeth, so you can still floss and things of that nature. And you're kind of like molding in a virtual way the tooth, which I thought was really interesting because most of the 3D model creation stuff you see, there's rarely tools that look like modeling tools where you can kind of add a little material, you kind of scrape away a little material. It looks like a very tactile thing. Of course, you're using a trackball the entire time. Do you find that doing that in the office, and I also noticed that the machine itself is right next to your patient, so the patient's watching you do this, which of course is pretty exciting for geeks. Do you find that it's a stepping between having a drill in someone's mouth and dealing with pain management to doing the computer work? Is that a very different kind of dentistry?
It's my dental video game, I say. And a lot of the tools patients have told me are a lot like Photoshop tools. I don't know Photoshop, so I can't comment on that, but it is very satisfying and a lot of fun for me. One of the nice things is that you can change the parameters as far as what is displayed. And this is contact strengths. So I can have a strong contact, one that would tear the floss if you tried to floss the teeth if I'm working on the contact, as opposed to one that would have no contact whatsoever and everything in between.
I thought that was kind of fascinating. One of the things that happened is you like tight contact, so you have less food going in between the teeth. Is that what I, was it correct,
correct
assumption?
Yes.
And when you did mine, you got a tight contact, and I couldn't. Later on, I had trouble with flossing early in the morning. Of course, the next day you came in and kind of sawed away some of the material. So there's still a lot of handwork being done after the tooth gets milled.
It's one of the few things, I think, that are still custom-made. I mean, there's so many things nowadays that everything's just made in large quantities to kind of generically fit everything, and this is something that truthfully is
very personal. Custom.
Yes, very personal.
And if you go to other places, you actually send the other dentists send their chips away for somebody else to make them, right?
Exactly. They're made by a dental laboratory that doesn't know you and
has never seen your teeth.
Never seen your teeth. And I have one patient that asked me to put her initials in her tooth, and it was we were able to do it with this. With this software, it was kind of fun.
How long has that lasted? She had come back saying, problem, or is it okay?
Well, we put her initials on the inside towards her tongue area on a lower molar, lower crown.
Have you serialized anybody yet so they can be identified later? The process of actually then, you know, we did two teeth at the same time right next to each other, two molars, and you're working on one, and then you say print, and you open up the next tooth, and the printing is actually in the other room wirelessly. There's a mill that takes the blank and slowly starts carving it away and drops off a little shell. It's actually, there's a picture of it up on the GeekSpeak site right now if you want to take a look at it. Kind of it fits over the actual tooth head. The crown is very much what you'd expect it to be. It's kind of a hollowed bowl that is the top of your tooth. And this enamel is very similar to human enamel, but it's actually artificial. What's the chemical compound of it?
Well, they have actually several materials available now for the machine, but the one I use mostly is a polyceramic that's feldspathic porcelain with lucite. And this gives us the same hardness, the same wearability, same indexes of refraction and coefficients of expansion and contraction. So it's pretty ideal. There are some newer ones also that are hardened, and the ones that I use, when they come out of the milling chamber, because the material is so dense, there's no porosity in it. It's very strong and polishes up beautifully. But there are other blocks of ceramic that actually you can place into an oven to sinter them, you know, have everything coalesce and gain even more strength.
Are you thinking about going to that?
Well, the problem is the blocks are blue in color, and so you really don't know the shade of the color, especially if you're trying to stain, mm-hmm. you know, in a glazing oven. And the I have seen some of these restorations, and they are quite unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess
stronger, but not as pretty.
Yeah, exactly. I guess you could use them off for the last teeth, way in the back where no one's going to see, and it would be all right.
All right. So that's a bit of the crown process. And, of course, the benefit of this is that you don't have that temporary crown that you have for 3 weeks and then come in and have it crunched away.
And that's actually where most of the inflammation of the nerve comes from, and why crowns can be so sensitive is because for 3 weeks you have a temporary crown that's probably started leaking after 48 hours because it's put on with temporary cement that is temporary, and you get bacteria going underneath the temporary crown as it percolates, and every time you chew, you more or less put hydraulic pressures on it that, you know, kind of squish and imbibe
stuff inside.
Yes.
Yeah.
And here comes the inflammation afterwards.
And then there's the horrible sensation of going into the dentist and having that thing crushed to take it off.
Well, you have to be numbed all over again, usually.
Yeah. All right. And instead, this is a 5-minute process or something, waiting for it to print, and then you polish it up a bit and pop it on.
Yes.
Pretty kind of cool
the,
stuff.
The database is one of the databases is teeth that have been waxed up by the world's foremost dental anatomist. Lee Culp is his name. So essentially, you could have the world's foremost dental anatomist doing every crown.
Right.
And that's
there's actually a world-renowned dentist. I mean, the crown maker.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah, we,
wow.
We love him. And the contacts that you have are patterned after P.K. Thomas. You know, in we have our own dental geekness.
Yeah.
You know,
so these are people who design the top of the teeth, kind of the cliffs and the valleys.
Exactly,
and
anatomy. Yes.
Interesting.
Now,
and there's an art. That's like an art form, then.
Yes, it is. There's also a database that is an Asian database. And so
are the teeth
guess
very different?
I find them more rounded and not so...
East Asia?
Well, it just says Asian database. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be... Most of the other databases are based on German denture tooth manufacturers.
Interesting.
What they consider the ideal tooth to be, which is...
And really, when you're dealing with this, it's important to have like an ideal tooth that functions correctly. But I guess the most important thing is to match the other side of your teeth, the top teeth or bottom teeth, the opposing teeth.
Precisely.
And one thing that's really interesting to me, you chose a selection that you had like young, midlife, aged or something.
Yes,
innocuous.
Yes.
But and the teeth, it was the same designer, if you will, but at different stages of life. And you chose at first the young tooth for one of the teeth, and it, sure enough, it had a lot more crowns, you know, valleys and ridges than my teeth do, because of course I'm in my 30s instead of young. Do you see a lot of change of teeth over age? Is it
very much with our society, you know, and the way we live, where everyone is just so stressed. It seems like everyone's grinding their teeth and wearing them down to flat surfaces.
Also, we live longer than the species first evolved
yes,
to do then.
Sure.
Most people are grinding their teeth at night, right?
Exactly.
We should talk about that.
Do you grind your teeth?
The large part of the population does. I don't think I do anymore, but I did as a kid.
My son does. I hear it every once in a while.
And it's very tough to break. You kind of have to wear something in your mouth, right, to prevent your teeth from grinding.
A bite guard that you wear
at night.
I don't
think anyone's really figured out how to stop people from grinding their teeth at night.
There's all kinds of, you know, some people think that orthodontics is the answer because there's a trigger point that, you know, you're just focusing on when you start stressing. And I think that it's episodic and people do it at different times. I think during holidays, such as Christmas, that's a big problem.
Life is different.
Yes.
So are these guards that you put in your mouth, do you wear guards like this?
No.
No?
I don't think I grind my teeth.
Anymore.
I've caught my wife kind of biting down really hard.
The guards
doing that, yeah.
The guards that I'm making now are patterned after the Invisalign aligners. So they're very comfortable, very thin, as opposed to the ones that were more or less like the athletic guards, bite guards.
But it's not so much, it's not just that you're grinding your teeth, but you're putting a lot of pressure on your jaw. So people who do this have a lot of pain in their mouth, right? During the day, they're sore.
Sure, you get essentially a Charlie horse
yeah.
in your jaw muscles.
So you might have a bite guard, but that's not going to prevent
the
muscle pain. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Headaches, the back of your neck, muscles get sore. There are several muscles that counterbalance the masseter, the main, you know, chewing muscle in the jaw.
Yeah.
And those take a hammering also.
I had an interesting experience, and I do this pretty much every time I go to the dentist. Anytime there's drilling and stuff going in my mouth, my body slowly starts to tense up, and I start getting paranoid. And then I have to consciously go, oh, yeah, right, everything's okay, and relax myself and, you know, meditate on something far away. And this last time, it was very interesting to me. That's what I was thinking about as you and Heidi are drilling away in my mouth, trying to control that fear and that, you know, stress of the experience.
But you had the active noise-canceling headphones on.
I didn't wear them.
Are you serious?
You know, I like hearing what they talk about, you know?
He's got a great selection of music.
He does, I know.
I listened to Pink Floyd last time I was there.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what the nitrous oxide is for.
To make you stop doing that?
Yes.
I didn't do
floating.
Nitrous. You know, I
yes.
just, yeah. But I also, one other thing that you do that I think is really cool is that prior to doing any kind of discovery of whether you're numb or not, like poking and probing, which is, I guess, traditional, you use like a cold thing. What is that?
Well, it's actually component cooler from Radio Shack. And we just chill a cotton pledget down to negative 64 degrees. When we put it on your tooth, if there's any saliva on your tooth, it sizzles and freezes it, freezes the cotton to your tooth. That's how cold it is.
And so you dry it first.
Yeah, yeah, so you can dry it. But and then we ask people if they feel cold. If they don't feel cold, then it's going to be a painless
So the whole tooth gets cold for a second. It goes right down to the nerve. And if the nerve is numb, it doesn't feel the cold. And then you ask afterwards, I'm like, no, I don't feel anything. You're like, put your tongue on it to warm up the tooth again.
Exactly.
And it was cold.
Yes, it is.
But it's interesting because that pain, I think we're all kind of used to, most of us have some sensitivity on some tooth for like ice cream or something. We're really good at avoiding having the ice cream avoid those spots because we know it so well.
Cold does not sound good to me.
No, but it's a lot better than steel pokey thing. That's why I liked it.
Or starting to drill.
And starting to drill, right.
Yes,
oh, man.
Worse, yes.
I'll take the drugs, thank you.
You know, okay, so this is kind of embarrassing. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. And to our regular listeners, finally you get to understand what the digital technology is. And one of the things that this little promo thing mentions is less radiation. We'll talk about that in just a second. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments of dentistry. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go online, go to geekspeak.org, and send us email. Stay tuned with KOSP for Castle College this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP.
KUSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz Ballet Theater's 25th anniversary season production of The Nutcracker. The Holiday Magic of The Nutcracker will be presented in Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium with a live symphony orchestra conducted by John Larry Granger. Performances are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, December 14th, 15th, and 16th. Tickets can be published online at scbt.org or by calling the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium box office at 420-5260.
Thank you, Ryder. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Ryder Brooks. We also have Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. We're talking to Dr. Henry J. Ramirez about dentistry. And you're welcome to call us up and ask us anything you'd like about dentistry. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And of course, he's not consulting as a dentist, he's consulting as a geek. So he can't take his medical advice on the show, but we're welcome to talk about dentistry in general. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Sean, you had a question, I believe?
Yeah, actually, Dr. Ramirez, is what we like about you is the fact that you are a geek. You are a dentist geek. You're always pushing the bounds of technology, and you love talking about it, which I think is really cool. But I want to talk to you about the hardware that runs, you know, your dentistry hardware, actual computer hardware, because I know you're really into computer hardware. We've talked about this before, and I'm wondering, what do you use today? What is most interesting to you?
Well, the most interesting hardware, I guess, that's come up, I actually don't own. It's a cone beam CAT scan, and that is used to take a 3D image of a person's skull, and this is used to place dental implants. And this
is like a CAT scan kind of thing.
It's a CAT scan sort of thing.
Wow!
And it's cdental.com. You can find out more about it. These are X-ray facilities that are throughout California, and they have these machines called cone beam CATs, you know, scans, X-ray machines. And the beauty of this is that when we place implants, a lot of times we are exploring the possibility of placing the implant because we don't know if there is adequate bone. We guess that there is, but an X-ray just shows us height and width, but not depth. With these scans, we can actually see exactly how much bone there is and where to place it.
Does this CAT scan then give you a 3D model of their entire jaw structure with their teeth and everything?
Yes, it does, in the software.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to know about computer hardware. Because, you know, where the processors are now getting multiple cores, right?
Yes.
Will that help you?
I think it has in the computer that I use the CEREC with, I'm actually not allowed into it to fuss with it.
Oh, really?
To change it at all because it's a device that's been approved by the FDA. And I was told if I do anything to it that, number one, my warranty would be...
And then the lawsuits go to you instead of the CEREC.
Right, exactly. And because I wanted to place a stronger video card in it.
Yeah.
when you start doing quadrants of teeth, you run out of memory pretty fast.
I was impressed with how slow, actually, no offense to the system,
well, yes,
that it took to do different steps, like load a new model and move the model. And the stuff that needed tactile feedback, they seemed to have pretty fast, but like the loading up and unloading of it,
yeah.
I'd want to hone that system so much. You know, it'd be snappy.
Interesting.
Get a RAID in there for the hard drive would increase it so much.
And in Europe, when you go online and you surf the dental websites, the dentists are taking those machines apart and putting in different
graphics cards and stuff.
Everything,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, have you thought about just doing that, like taking the software, installing on a new machine, and actually just seeing how fast it is and things? I mean, it seems. Is Cerec own all this copyright, or can you theoretically buy a different certified machine? Or is this a business that Sean and I could get into, certifying really fast machines for dentists in the U.S.?
Actually, I did do that. I got a hold of a Sharp Aquos laptop, the one that was a 3D laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did place the Cerec software on it, and it did work beautifully on that.
I can imagine. Yeah.
On a laptop. I can imagine what you could do with a big desktop.
Like a geek machine.
Yeah. The dual core, you know, such as... Well, actually, my Mac is that way with a dual mm-hmm. Intel is just super fast, very stable, and I wish that I could play with the machine.
Yeah. I think we will go ahead and take a colleague now on GeekSpeak. Dr. Don from Royal Oaks, welcome to GeekSpeak. Don?
Line 3?
Yeah, I've got all that. Oh, I know why. I'm so sorry. No? Don, are you there? You know what? She probably got a call, so we'll try to get her back. As we're waiting for Dr. Don, let's go ahead and go to Hal in Santa Cruz. Hal, welcome to GeekSpeak. What's your question today?
Good morning. It all sounds too good to be true. I guess the question that occurs to me is, why isn't everyone doing it? I know when laser eye surgery or whatever came in, there was and there may still be a tiny fraction of procedures that go bad, and when they go bad, they can go really bad. I wonder if there's any information available on the downside.
Henry?
Yes, of course.
Why aren't people doing it, I guess?
Well, okay. The reason people aren't doing it, I guess it may be the large initial investment involved, and also there are some people that just should never own a computer. You know, they're... I guess, you know, if you don't spend a lot of time improving your skills, well, for one thing, when the dental supply people sell you the machine, they sell it as essentially a no-brainer. You know, anybody can do it, and it'll turn out beautifully every time, so on and so forth. And nothing is farther from the truth. I think that there is a tremendous learning curve, and the software certainly is elegant and beautiful, but like any computer, you know, garbage in, garbage out.
And I would say that you're an early adapter, wouldn't you say, on this?
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of dentists doing it, but you're in the always on the cut of what is new, and therefore you have to learn a lot more than maybe in 20 years what a dentist will have to learn with the system.
In the old days, becoming a dentist required digital dexterity. Very interesting, the pun you can make out of it.
Actually, Henry, that's one other thing that I noticed this time. I saw one of your back rooms where you make a lot of your molds and things like that, and there's tons of tools, and I realized, well, you're a sculptor as well as a computer-efficient person. You have very good digital dexterity. I'm assuming that most dentists do, right?
Oh, yes. Before you get into dental school, you're actually tested on that. They give you a pencil, and they have certain circles drawn on a piece of paper, and they give you so many seconds, and then you have to put so many... Then they count up how many dots you've been able to...
To replicate,
and just all kinds of those kind of crazy little tests.
So you'd say you're pretty good with your hands?
Yes.
So what I gather from the response is that I should look for somebody with the most experience with this technology, not just go to anybody who's got it.
Well, you know, that's hard for a patient or a layperson to evaluate. I think any dentist you go to that has this technology will be doing their absolute best, and I think that they're the finest restorations available.
Now, there is an aspect of this that is you know, the traditional dental skills of knowing whether you've got a crown or a filling done right so the bite's correct and all those, the you know, making sure that there's enough space for dental, that's traditional. You've been trained in that. You're a good dentist. You know how to do that kind of work. This really just takes the process of sending out for a crown and puts it in the office. Now, of course, you have to make the crown too. But I would assume that most dentists have had an experience of sending out for a crown. They get back something they weren't exactly expecting, and they have to deal with that. So the skills are not exactly foreign to dentists. Just using the software is kind of foreign.
Well, in dental school, we have to make our own teeth. I mean, from the ground up.
With traditional molding?
Yes, the whole ballywick. And so this is really elegantly beautiful. It's mm-hmm. it's fun. And, I just can't. He also mentioned something about laser. Yeah. In dentistry, we use laser soft tissue diode lasers, and we are getting miraculous results with that for gum problems. Very much, I think, the way that everyone's doing laser on the eyes now,
and, yeah.
I mean, rather than a microtome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Charles, for the call.
Sure.
Dr. Dawn is back, so I'd like to get her on. Dawn, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you. What's your question, Dr. Dawn?
Well, I get a lot of questions about mercury amalgam and the use of these new plastic fillings or resin fillings, but I'm wondering if there's any data about their toxicity and what the doctor's thoughts were about filling materials in general.
Well, I believe that a silver mercury amalgam filling that is in a person's tooth, as long as it's functioning well, can stay there, and there is minimal toxicity. I myself can't get far enough away from it and so I don't place them, because the actual placing of it over an 8-hour day, over and over, I mean, that's when I'm going to have the most exposure to it for myself and for my staff. As far as the toxicity of the methyl methacrylate resins, yes, they are toxic. They're not as toxic as mercury, but really, I don't think there's anything that is not toxic to one degree or another.
Do you know if these resins are tested in a pretty? Have they done
yes,
in-person testing of this?
They're based on the molecule that dentures are based on. Huh. Methyl methacrylate, you know, and the thing is that dentures have been around a long time, and unless you are allergic to that particular compound, I don't think there's much of a problem.
Do you test for that?
No, usually people come back, and I've never seen it myself. I've only read about it, and there'll be a lot of inflammation, and they'll just track it down to that.
Miles?
And it's probably worth noting that not getting the dental care that you need is even more toxic than any of these substances would be.
Don, you have some medical experience. What do you think about that? I mean, I know you're calling us, but I'd normally call you. So.
I know. Well, I was interested because I appreciate the comments about the industrial hazards to the dental care people, because those are the people I've seen with the most mercury toxicity, actually, when I've gone and tested for it. Mm-hmm. But what I think is that if I can have it, I don't want any more mercury fillings, and I definitely don't want any mercury fillings opposing gold fillings, because that creates electrostatic reactions that actually may cause the mercury to leach out much more rapidly.
Interesting.
But if you've already got one, it's like stirring a pot where the mud is all settled to the bottom. Leave it in and don't try to drill it out, because the people I've seen who've really gotten into trouble are the ones who had all of their dental fillings removed at once.
So what you're saying is that during the drilling process, some of the particles go back into the body.
It volatilizes and becomes a gas.
Exactly.
And is inhaled and gets right into the bloodstream and then right into the brain.
How do you deal with that when you're drilling out mercury fillings? I'm assuming you run into that.
Well, I have most dental offices will have a vacuum,
mm-hmm.
A one-horse vacuum pump. It depends on how many users there are. And I have three vacuum pumps that I use, and we
try to suck as much gas as possible.
Yeah, with high-speed evacuation and also the use of a rubber dam, which is essentially a non-latex but latex-like a stretchy diaphragm that fits over your mouth and keeps it from going down the back of your throat.
Now, and then do you ask people to breathe through their nose then?
Well, yes. I mean, especially if they have the nitrous mask on.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So you'd kind of prefer almost that, so you have a clean air supply going in.
You can't breathe through your mouth when you have a rubber dam on, because
okay,
your
so
whole
really blocked.
Mouth is blocked off.
So that's something to look for if you're going to go in to get dentistry work and you've got fillings with mercury in them, make sure that you don't have a way to that mercury to get into your body. Try to minimize it as much as possible. And then I'm assuming, do you and your staff, when you're drilling out a mercury filling, do you deal with masks and stuff?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
There are universal precautions that we take.
Well, thank you, Don, for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
See you next week.
It's like working with asbestos.
Yes.
You know, yes. It's interesting. One thing that you mentioned, when we come in, we talk a lot about dentistry. And one of the things you mentioned is that in the enamels that are like replacing the not crowns that are being molded and glued on or whatever, the fillings themselves, that material is pretty toxic. It smells bad. But you notice that any kind of fissures that happen between the enamel and that cause decay more than the mercury fillings.
Right.
And you have a theory about that?
Yes, I think that it's actually the mercury toxicity that kills the plaque that gets that percolates down in between the tooth and the filling. Whereas the resins, the white plastic fillings, they don't have any of that, and so it's. It's also, I think, because the resin fillings tend to flex so much more. They work like a membrane. The larger they are, the more they flex, and they're like a surfboard that's been hit by too many waves. They start to open up and delaminate.
Mm-hmm. Since they're kind of still a much harder material than kind of a silver mercury or a gold, that the entire structure moves, not just the very local location. So, I mean, because I'm assuming that the silver or the gold actually will deform as well with a bite and bounce back a little bit.
It'll wear away and work harden, but the plastic, it's kind of like a trampoline sort of thing.
Uh-huh. The whole thing kind of moves.
The whole thing kind of moves, and it puts a lot of stress on the bond itself. There was a study, I think it was in Denmark, and after about 3 years, it seemed like the bond strengths fell off a cliff, but they were pretty strong for 3 years. I thought, that when I was replacing dental amalgam with the composite resin fillings, mm-hmm. that I was exchanging apples for apples, but really plastic is nowhere near as strong as metal. Never has been. Well, maybe it will be in the future, but it certainly doesn't have the life.
And you're talking about the plastics that can be liquid and then hardened with ultraviolet to produce kind of tooth enamel, not the same stuff that is the carved out of the crown, because that's not a liquid.
Correct.
Okay. And so is that stuff the strongest tooth or as strong as metal?
Yes. Okay. Well, the metal's the hardest and the strongest. The gold standard was such because they were able to alloy gold to reach the same hardness, their Bernal hardness numbers, and the same wearability as natural enamel. But this material goes one step farther and actually is even closer.
Chemically close to it as well.
Yes.
And it doesn't look gold. I mean, unless you like that
beautiful.
Bling.
Yes.
We're going to go ahead and take another question. This question from Helen. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Helen, where are you calling from?
Hi, thanks. SoCal.
SoCal, what's your question today?
It's a very interesting show. Thank you. There's two questions now. You're talking about the exact light seclusion with one tooth and a crown, but I'm wondering if your machine also gets larger, like if the bite trajectory is off in the first place and the occlusions are off and functional testing is off, can the machine help you find the right placement for the teeth? No. So I guess embedded in that, there's two questions. If you're doing a series like of crowns or crowns and bridges.
And then also... Well, hang on just a second. Let's take them one at a time. Stay with us.
Yeah.
Your answer?
The bite registration is a static bite registration. Essentially, we just have you bite straight down. And the jaw is such an incredible joint. It actually, when you yawn, the ball and socket come apart and held together by the ligaments. So you're able to move your jaw in so many different directions, right, left, forwards, back, that it's really, we get an idealized tooth form that fits in what we call centric occlusion, or when you bite straight down. But when you start going sideways and whatnot, that's up to the dentist to make sure that there are no balancing interferences. That's what we call a problem of lateral shear stress when the tooth is being banged by an opposing tooth.
I actually had some of that problems when we did my teeth last week, and could not really sense the right bite. And it wasn't about the pressure down. It was kind of as the teeth closed, they felt strange. And I couldn't feel it when it was numb because I was still numb from being drilled out. So I came back the next day, and then I was able to feel it. And sure enough, there was something that was happening when I moved my jaws back and forth, my top teeth over the bottom teeth back and side to side.
Yes.
And that was part of – and then you just went and did your traditional like dental work of detecting where that is, drilling it down, polishing it, checking it again. And that was kind of the – I would say kind of the art side of it, not as much as a science. It's really a feeling that you and the patient – come to a conclusion with.
It really is a problem when people are numb and they don't know where they're closing, you know. And so it's pretty routine for us to always tell our patients that they need to come back once they're not numb if they feel that anything is not, you know, comfortable or the way that it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you have
a second
question?
The machine then cannot get the exact right occlusions.
Because it's a static occlusion. And it's
right.
Done, it's done from just a bite registration. What about using... I mean, I'm assuming that if you take this technology, keep going, the CAT scan type thing that you use for implants, you could theoretically start modeling the entire bite.
Yes.
The software doesn't do that yet, though.
Right. Well, there are ways with articulators, which are these machines that hold, you know, your models together, where you can take bite registrations, which are over to the side, you know, and kind of adjust. The articulators so that they mimic those motions, and
but that's not automated in a computer system.
No, yet. But that's not happening with the CEREC.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Oh, can I have one more quick question?
Sure, go ahead, Helen.
So I think what I was hearing when you were answering Dr. Don is that the material you use is methylmethacrylate. So for people who are allergic to methylmethacrylate, then.
And this is the resin type, the filling type?
That's what I thought I heard him say when he was answering Dr.
Don.
The CEREC is a polyceramic.
A polyceramic?
Not methylmethacrylate.
No, the white resin fillings are the methylmethacrylate based.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And for those who are allergic to that, do you have
other choices?
Other choices?
Do you still do gold?
Well, there's glass ionomer. There are other choices, yes.
But you don't.
Would
use
you,
them?
If you ran into a situation where someone was they knew they were allergic to that, or you did have inflammation, what would your protocol be for taking care of that patient?
Thank you,
Helen, for the call.
Well, we would either be using gold, the polyceramic CEREC, or glass ionomer.
So you have choices in office.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any colleagues in the area that have more experience with people that have allergies of this sort? I mean, if someone came in and said, I'm allergic to this thing, would you be tentative of even working with them, or do you have any patients like that?
No, I've never had anyone that's allergic to that. And I would just Google it first
and see what to
like
do.
Like everyone else and find out what's going on.
All right. Perry from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi, Perry.
Yeah, I had a question about... I had two questions, if possible.
Well, let's hit the first one. So go ahead.
The first one is CEREC only used for crowns, or can it be used for, like, fillings, too?
It's definitely used for fillings. We use it for veneers on front teeth. Beautiful material. It's what they call metameric, which means it actually sucks the color from the stump of the tooth. So it is so lifelike. It's unbelievable.
But you didn't use it for filling on my tooth. So when do you decide to use it versus not use it?
Well, the fillings are, we call them inlays, or sometimes if they're overly large, onlays. And they fit sort of like a key into a lock sort of thing. And on the back chewing teeth, if there's a very large filling already in existence, I prefer to give you like a beret hat or a beanie hat, just a new chewing surface, because... Mm-hmm. My experience has been when I leave a couple shards of unsupported enamel, it seems like just later, a year or two later, you happen to bite down and that will snap off. But if there's a lot of good tooth structure left, we certainly don't want to sacrifice that for a crown.
But you did do a traditional filling with like a resin, or not traditional, but like a resin filling on my teeth. Why not do Alsman's crown?
Well, as long
or a CEREC.
As long as the resin fillings are sufficiently supported by a large amount of natural tooth structure, they can give you very good service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also, the fee on them is probably a fifth of what a CEREC would be.
That's a good point. And in fact, that's kind of interesting. Sean, you suggested I go to Henry and actually interview him a long time ago because it was such a geeky dentist. Very good call. Yeah. And my insurance company partially covers it. Your company stopped. I mean, you guys stopped.
Well, the company, when I used to see Dr. Ramirez, the company was really, you know, the insurance was great. But my current company Dr. Ramirez doesn't support the insurance. Yeah.
Is it? I've talked to a lot of doctors about this kind of issue of this medical insurance being the biggest factor about what patients they see. Is that true for you?
Well, it certainly is a hardship for many people who have policies which are not looking out for their best interest. And unfortunately, they don't usually choose the policy. It's something that's chosen by their employer. And there are a lot of... we're trying to work with them as much as possible, but it just seems as if they're
it's
in
a
the
losing
business.
Battle.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, I appreciate that you're able to work with me. I mean, I'm happy about that. I like it a lot. It's a shame the insurance company process is so difficult. I think we're going to go ahead and take your second call, Perry. What's your second question?
Yeah. I think on the radio something about research they've been doing that looks at, like, the bacterial community in the mouth and how if it gets out of balance, it can lead to more tooth decay. And I was just wondering, Dr. Ramirez, have you heard of any, have you heard of this research, and is there any, like, therapies that might be coming out of it?
Well, there's what they found is that bacteria create a community, and that's called a biofilm. And this biofilm can be very tough, and it can cause a lot of problems with decay, especially along the gum line where a lot of people don't brush very often. And now there's actually what happens is the bacteria are fermenting the carbohydrate in your diet, and they're damaging the enamel, which is the glass-like, you know, covering over the top of your tooth. In order to remineralize that, they're using you need phosphate, fluoride, and calcium, and that's now being packaged in a casein vehicle so that even if you don't remove the biofilm, the casein allows it to adhere and presents these inorganic ions so that the remineralization of the enamel can happen, and the repaired enamel is actually stronger than the original equipment. As far as, you know, having testing done for what sort of bacteria you have in your mouth, that is something that for gum disease is really coming to the forefront now, where samples are being taken and seeing what sort of bacteria are mostly in your mouth and what sort of low dosage long-term antibiotic therapy can help stop the periodontal disease.
Isn't there such thing as like good bacteria to have in your mouth, like, you know, that will kind of make the balance be more towards not causing tooth decay or gum disease?
Thank you, Perry, for the question. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know about... I know that there's good bacteria in your gut, and I know that you do want... You know, there is no way around having flora in your mouth, and some is definitely worse than others.
Do they fight each other?
Well...
I mean, your body doesn't actually use them. It's just about whether... there's going to be bacteria, and the question, I guess, is if you have some strain that's not as offensive, is that healthier to have than none?
Absolutely. There's a mouthwash called Paradex, a chlorhexidine, and in some individuals, what this does is it does everything Listerine purports to do, but it does it for 8 hours. So it essentially removes a lot of bacteria from your mouth and the bad bacteria, and what's left to grow over is the good bacteria, but sometimes,
or at least to keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, but sometimes that good bacteria has other side effects. One of them,
you know what, Henry, we're running out of time. Oh. I'm so sorry. Thank you so much, Henry Ramirez, for being here. If you want to learn more about Henry Ramirez, you're welcome to give him a call. His office phone number is, oh gosh, and I don't have it in front of me. 423-2447, and that's Dr. Henry Ramirez on SoCal. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
The Geeks This Morning were Sean, Miles, and Ryder. My name is Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Selkill Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.